You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
This is the year of the bloodsucker. No, I'm not referring to some of the key players in our national political scene, but rather the forecasted explosion of ticks and mosquitoes. These parasites have been bugging mankind for a long time. An older sister species of our present-day mosquito was found in some Burmese amber that was estimated to be 90 to 100 million years old. Lyme disease was discovered in 15 million-year-old ticks. We've all heard of the yearly hurricane forecast made by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Now, the Companion Animal Parasite Council is predicting that in 2016, the spread of vector-borne disease agents transmitted by ticks and mosquitoes will continue to promulgate and create a year-round menace to both pets and pet owners. Veterinarian Dr. Karen Fling, owner of East Lake Veterinary Hospital in Dallas, Texas, and member of the Companion Animal Parasite Council, is my guest today. We're going to discuss diseases that can affect cats, dogs, and sometimes their owners, and what you can do to protect the entire family. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's hard to find time for your furry family member. That's where Camp Bow Wow comes in. All-day play and overnight camp, daycare and boarding for dogs. Everything is included. Large play areas for fun and exercise. Spacious cabins, comfy cots, even live camper cams to watch from a computer or smartphone. Camp Bow Wow offers the best care and is the place to go where a dog can be a dog. For locations and more information, visit campbowwow.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Fling, I appreciate you being with us today. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
First of all, tell us a little bit about what is the Companion Animal Parasite Council.
Well, the Companion Animal Parasite Council, also known as CAPC, is the leading source on parasitic diseases that threaten the health of pets and people. And we're a nonprofit organization and largely made up of parasitologists, industry leaders, and even general practitioner veterinarians like myself.
What I find so fascinating, there's so many times I'll have diseases that I'm trying to explain to a client and they just seem to fuzz over. You explain it and it's like, this is not making sense. What is this lifestyle and the life cycle that goes through this and it goes through that? And am I concerned?
Right. It's complicated information. It really is.
CAPC Vet is wonderful because they can go online and get information on it.
Right. That's exactly right. In fact, pet parents can go on to petsandparasites.org, and the Companion Animal Parasite Council also even has a free app that you can download for your iPad. So there's lots of great information that is out there, and the parasitologists that are a part of our group have really put together some easy to read and follow information related to these diseases we're talking about. And I love the information you shared about mosquitoes and about Lyme disease. And those things are such menaces to our pets and menaces to us, really.
It is just amazing. I was reading one place, and you can confirm this is correct or not, that mosquitoes have been the most deadly agent in our entire life history, mankind's history, killing more people than all the wars combined. And that is mind-boggling.
It really is. And now we've got threats with things like Zika virus carried by mosquitoes. The good news is that at least the Zika virus, while it's a very real threat to people, it doesn't appear to affect our pets. But those same mosquitoes that carry the Zika virus actually carry deadly heartworm disease to our dogs and cats. And a lot of people really don't realize that. And that is something that is pet people that we can prevent for both of our dogs and cats.
This year, 2016, I think this is something new that CAPSI has come up with, is this forecast for the year. What are you forecasting besides gloom and doom?
Well, this is a very new initiative for CAPSI, and it's very exciting that we've been able to use real data points, real science, real information from laboratory testing to predict what the risks are for our pets and also our families. And in 2016, our new forecasts are predicting a very, very big year for ticks and mosquitoes. And so what this means is that there are parasitic diseases that our pets are at risk for. But the good news is your pet's veterinarian can be the real expert in terms of the microclimate in your area based on these maps and can help you to keep your pet safe. There are very good medications to keep our pets safe and generally year-round protection, as is advised through your pet's doctor, is the best way to go.
And what I think a lot of people are just really amazed is in the beginning I mentioned in the introduction that fleas and ticks, we used to think of them, and mosquitoes as seasonal, and now they're year-round.
Right. That is a common misperception that we only have to worry when the weather gets warmer. But honestly, we've had such a mild winter across the country and in most areas a lot more rain than usual. And we think that's all part of why these forecasts are showing such a big uptick in mosquitoes and the spread of ticks as well. But it is a year-round problem. And really, we do need to look at this as something that we need to protect our pets from 12 months a year.
Does one seem to be more of a problem than the other, ticks or mosquitoes?
Well, both will be big this year. And ticks are really something that we're seeing a huge, huge spread with, especially through the central part of the country. We are seeing a great increase in Lyme disease. And in fact, all 50 states now have Lyme disease present. And even in areas where the disease has not been as much of a problem, we are seeing expansion into Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, and Kentucky, greater incidences there. And in fact, it looks like countrywide Lyme disease is increasing. And really, these forecasts are showing about the only area that we're seeing a little bit of improvement is in the New England area. And perhaps that is related to awareness on the part of pet owners and the awareness that prevention 12 months per year is really so very important for our pets.
And Lyme disease, I think a lot of people realize that they're susceptible to this.
Indeed.
Now, what does Lyme disease look like in a pet? People, I think, are aware that it might be that bull's eye lesion.
Exactly.
You had a tick, but oftentimes you don't even know that a tick has burrowed into your skin or that of your pets.
That's a great point. And I do think a lot of people are aware of that classic bullseye sort of rash or lesion that people frequently have. But even in people, you may or may not see that. And with pets, certainly, we don't usually see a classic rash with them. And I think with diseases like Lyme disease or other blood parasite diseases like Ehrlichia or Rocky Mountain spotted fever, frequently those diseases as a group are called the great imitators, because the signs of these diseases can be so variable. You can see anything from arthritic symptoms to bleeding tendencies to even kidney problems. So there's no one set group of signs. And honestly, some of these pets will not even show signs when they are sick from these diseases. So again, your pet's veterinarian is your local expert. They can help you know how to prevent these things. And they can also do regular testing to make sure your pet is not already affected.
Where are these animals? Oh, I live in a very suburban area, and I still see dogs, cats coming in with ticks on their body, and the owners are just flabbergasted. Where did this happen? You know, it just walks my neighborhood. I'm not going into brushy areas. Where do they find these ticks? Where do the ticks find the dog and the cat?
Well, that is such a familiar story. Very often, the most protected, well-cared for pets get these diseases and suffer from these parasites. And they are truly dynamic things that are ever-changing and spreading. And you can't predict where you're going to come in contact with these. And I think because of our pet's fur, very often they can have these parasites and we aren't even aware of it. It's so common that we see that. And with ticks, again, we've got Lyme disease in all 50 states. So we have these tick issues across the country. And with Lyme disease in particular, it is the number one disease spread by ticks. And where we don't worry about Lyme disease going directly from the pet to us, it's those same ticks that carry it to both pets and people. So if we see these diseases, we see these problems in pets, it does mean that our family is at risk too. But again, these parasites are all preventable.
So they're walking in their pristine little neighborhoods. There's brushy areas. The ticks can survive in the environment, sometimes in the house over the winter, even if they're someplace like Wisconsin. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're spot on there. Very true. And some people have even said in colder parts of the country where you have that great snow cover that happens, that even a snow cover can act as an insulating blanket for these ticks, protecting them. And as soon as we have the first little bit of a thaw, then up come the ticks and they're alive and thriving and ready for a new host. Scary, creepy stuff.
And if anyone has ever been bitten by a tick, and thankfully, it's only happened to me once. You get a mosquito bite, ow, it hurts. You get a flea bite, oh, you know it happened. But ticks, those little stinkers, will burrow into the body and you don't feel anything. And all of a sudden you look and there is this thing that's attached to you and it's getting bigger and bigger and it's sucking your blood.
Absolutely.
What is the time frame of a tick jumps on the body, burrows itself into your body, before you have that risk of having disease transmission? Is it immediate?
Well, with any bite, you can have a risk that will happen. And of course, the longer a tick stays attached, the greater the likelihood is that the organisms are transmitting and passing to the new host. But any tick bite is a bad thing. Any mosquito bite is a bad thing. And I think that a lot of pet owners don't realize that all it takes is one bite for these things to happen. And in heartworm disease, for example, one mosquito bite is all it takes. And I think it is a misperception that people think, oh, this is a dog thing, but it's a cat thing too. Cats are very susceptible. And a lot of pet owners don't really realize that. But one bite is all that it takes for any number of these diseases.
Dr. Fling, definitely want to talk about cats and heartworm because that is such a tragic occurrence. And the signs are so different than what we see in a dog. Getting back to ticks a little bit, when a client or a pet owner sees a tick either on themselves or on a pet, I know there's all sorts of wives' tales of how to remove them. You burn them, you put nail polish, you twist left, you twist right. What's the best way to get a tick off?
Well, as soon as possible, number one, and generally just kind of pulling downward and away from the mouth parts. There are actually even some little devices that are tick removers. You can use those. And, you know, of course, your pet's veterinarian can probably help you deal with tick removal in a better way to make sure that you don't leave any mouth parts behind, because these crazy little blood-sucking ticks, they actually secrete a substance that's almost like a cementing agent that will allow those mouth parts to really attach and hang on. So there is a bit of an art to removing it. And it's probably best something that you talk to your pet's veterinarian about rather than trying to describe it without a physical demonstration. But the sooner is the better. And of course, if you can prevent any of these ticks from even becoming an issue by preventative medication, that's the best means of action, of course.
And that's great. And so many times what we find frustrating is the medication may have killed the tick, but because you're right, it's almost like a crazy glue that cements that tick's mouth parts into the body. They're dead, but they're still attached. And
right.
I've always heard that you don't want to use your bare fingers to try to remove it if somebody's going to try to remove a tick at home, because if you have a small cut in your own finger and you now squeeze this tick, and you could be squeezing some of this little blood pillow into your pet and causing issues. You want to pull straight out and don't do it with bare fingers using something like needle nose pliers if you have to do it at home.
That is a great point. And like you say, we're talking about microscopic little agents that can transfer to either us or our pets. And a little cut at your cuticle, if you contact the secretions from inside the tick, boy, that's all it takes for even you to have a problem. So gloves or pliers or tweezers, definitely not barehanded.
Great idea. You mentioned heartworm, and heartworm is a disease I think a lot of people consider, okay, if you're back in Louisiana, you're in Florida, you're in Texas, North Carolina, places where I always tell people, you know, during the summer is where the national bird or their state bird is going to be a mosquito, and it carries small children away because of there's so many of them.
Right.
It's not just a dog problem. First, talk a little bit about heartworm, and then I really want to concentrate on cats.
Of course. Well, heartworm disease is a disease transmitted by mosquito. And again, it only takes one mosquito bite for it to happen. And literally from a tiny little larval form inside of the mosquito, once it's deposited in the host, which is typically a dog or a cat, that little larva will wind up going inside of the heart, growing up into a spaghetti-like worm. And a lot of times when we have these infections, it's not just one worm. It may be a tangle, a mass of these worms that fill the heart and also go into the pulmonary artery, which goes to the lungs. And even as few as one or two worms, when you consider the size of a little tiny cat heart, that can have devastating consequences. And with dogs, frequently we see even bigger worm burdens in their hearts. So we can see 20 or 30 worms tangled up inside the heart chamber. And obviously, when you've got spaghetti-like worms inside the heart can't function properly. And over time, these dogs and cats go into heart failure or respiratory failure. And very often, by the time you see symptoms, it's too late to treat the dogs that have it. And for the poor cats that get it, there's no licensed approved treatment for them. But the good news is there is preventative medication that you can use to prevent from ever having heartworm disease at all.
As I understand, this is really basically a 100% preventable disease. Your cat, your dog does not have to get this disease at all. The medication is really very cost effective and it's easy to give. There's topicals, there's pills, there's chewables, there's so many different forms depending on what your pet likes.
You're so right. These are things that are very easily prevented, and there are a variety of choices of great medications to use. And again, your pet's doctor will be the best expert to advise you as to which products are best for your particular pet and for your region of the country and relative to risk factors in your area. But yes, these things are definitely preventable. And as far as treatment goes, once they have the disease, not only is the treatment risky, but there is a chance the product may not be available to treat them once they have heartworm disease. At least that's the case with dogs currently. And for cats, there is no treatment for heartworm disease once they have it. But preventatives, on the other hand, are readily available. And you mentioned cost and that these preventatives are cost effective. They definitely are. And compared to the cost of treatment, it's been estimated that prevention costs 2 to 9 times less than actually treating for heartworm disease, if you can even treat for it. So that's a good reason to go ahead and prevent it in the first place. It's a really cost-effective insurance policy, I like to say.
I love insurance. I'm speaking right now with veterinarian Dr. Karen Fling. She's owner of East Lake Veterinary Hospital in Dallas, Texas, and also a member of the Companion Animal Parasite Council. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy.
Tons of energy.
Happy the rescue dog is happy the healthy dog.
Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good healthy weight.
Molly's been having 4 scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows,
how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
DinoVite is nutrition.
Just feed your dog right.
Due to DinoVite.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite for life.
DinoVite.com.
Are you having trouble getting the word out about your new pet product or invention? Let Whitegate PR open the gate to your marketing and public relations efforts. We've been specializing in public relations in the pet industry for over a decade. From press releases to media relations and publicity to pet trade shows and launch events to social media, the pet-friendly team at Whitegate PR has you covered. If you listen to the wise words of Bill Gates, he says, "If I had $1 left, I'd spend it on PR." Learn more at whitegatepr.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Fling, I'd love to have you go back a little bit and talk about the signs that you're going to see with feline heartworm disease. Because in dogs, okay, you may have a coughing dog and it may be months after it's had exposure. But what do you see in cats?
Well, frequently with cats, we see no symptoms initially. And so we can have the cat that we do not know has heartworm disease, where they've had a mosquito bite that's transmitted the larva that's caused this spaghetti-like worm to grow inside of the heart. And then sometimes we hear stories where suddenly a cat passes away with no warning and the family is devastated. And then on autopsy, we go and we find, my goodness, it was heartworm disease. And that is just a devastating way to find out that your cat's afflicted with this parasite. So definitely the best advice is to see your pet's doctor regularly, have your cat tested and find out whether or not your cat does have heartworm disease. And then if you're not on preventative year-round protection, talk to your pet's veterinarian about that as well.
Dr. Fling, thank you for bringing that up about testing. I mean, there is such an easy test that we do with dogs. It is highly sensitive. It's highly specific. If it comes up positive, you can pretty much feel assured, oh, your dog has heartworm. Or if it's negative, fabulous. Your dog doesn't have heartworm. But as I understand, and I'm in Southern California, and thankfully, heartworm is extremely rare in Southern California for dogs and cats that just live here and haven't traveled. But explain a little bit about the heartworm testing for cats, some of the nuances there.
Well, it is a little bit trickier for cats. Very typically, a cat will have a lower worm burden with the heartworm in the heart. And if you have a low number of worms in the heart, you may have a false negative test. So certainly you could have a negative test that isn't actually negative. And the testing actually registers the substance from a female heartworm's uterus. And so even
that's
with
pretty
dogs,
specific. Yes.
That's very specific. And even with dogs, you could have a negative test, but still actually have heartworms. Say, for example, if you had an all male population of worms. So you could have heartworms and have a negative test. So the test is not perfect, but at least if you've got a negative test, you feel reasonably safe about going ahead and getting started on preventative. And so that's something you can do both for dogs and cats year-round to keep them protected and safe. And it is very, very effective.
So with dogs, what are the signs that you're going to be seeing with dogs?
With dogs and heartworm disease, again, you may see no symptoms initially, but as the disease advances, you can see more advanced symptoms like coughing, signs of exercise intolerance, depression, lethargy, and in very severe cases, as the heart begins to fail from the burden of heartworms there inside of the heart, you will oftentimes see a very distended pot belly sort of appearance where the abdomen is full of fluid. And often by the time you see those symptoms, it may be too late to successfully treat a dog for heartworm disease. And cats, on the other hand, very frequently are viewed as having more respiratory type symptoms, more coughing, even symptoms that may mimic asthma sort of disease.
And or so a hairball.
Or a hairball. Yeah, exactly. And so often we'll see the kitties that people have seen symptoms, warning signs with, and then only do we find out that it's heartworm disease when it's too late to manage. And again, there's no licensed approved treatment for cats for heartworm disease. Once they have it, we can prevent it in the first place. But once they have it, the only thing we can really do is provide supportive care to hopefully allow the cat's symptoms to be managed to try to help that cat outlive the heartworm disease. But very frequently, there is not a successful outcome for the kitties that have heartworm disease. So again, prevention is the best medicine.
You had mentioned treatment for dogs. If, again, not having heartworm in my part of the United States, I understand that for a period of time that the treatment was not available.
The treatment is still somewhat difficult to get. Sadly, there is only one company that makes the treatment for heartworm disease in dogs. And currently, the product is actually produced outside of the continental United States. And so what veterinarians have to do is order the product case by case individually as the need arises. So there's a great deal of control relative to getting this product. And as veterinarians in practice, many of us worry that it's not a case of if, but when we won't be able to get the drug to treat heartworm. So definitely prevention is the best medicine. And even though in your area where heartworm disease is not as much of a threat as, say, in my area, which is in Texas, where we have lots and lots of heartworm disease, the CAPC forecasts are actually showing that with the rise in mosquitoes and with the increase in mobility of pets and their families, that really there's not a state in the country that is not free from heartworm or safe from this risk. And many of the preventatives that we have that are available not only protect against heartworm, but they also protect against other parasites, things like fleas, ticks, intestinal parasites, things like hookworms, whipworms, and roundworms. So one easy to give medication can keep you safe from all of these things.
That insurance policy, again, a monthly, inexpensive, easy to administer preventive is just so much in your pet's favor. And even people that have, and I love this, I have cats that come in, well, it's totally indoors. How can it ever be exposed to rabies? It can't be exposed to heartworm. It can't be exposed to fleas. And going, not so much. They're not living in a bubble. They come in the house, that bat will fly through the door sometimes or be up in the attic. You can bring things in or you open up the door and that mosquito flies in.
That's right. The outdoors definitely can come indoors. So yes, even thinking that an indoor pet is safe and protected is really a false sense of security. And you mentioned rabies too. And certainly an indoor dog or cat is going to be much less likely to get rabies. But one of the things that I think is so important, and again, talking about another insurance policy, there are quarantine laws to where if a pet bites or scratches somebody, that then that pet can be required by state officials to be rabies tested. And rabies testing is a fatal test. Basically, they have to harvest brain tissue to find out whether or not a pet is carrying the rabies virus. So as we talk about protecting our pets, even in the event that an unlikely bite or scratch might happen, having that rabies vaccine done will keep us out of trouble should a bite or scratch occur. And I say scratch too, because many areas will require rabies quarantine, even for a scratch, because sometimes when issues occur where there's a skirmish or a frightened pet, where an incident happens and there's a break of skin on a person, sometimes the event happens so quickly, we don't know if it was a tooth or a claw. And so animal control officials generally will require quarantining or rabies testing for bites or scratches. So again, having that rabies vaccine up to date and proper registration with your local municipality is great insurance for your pet.
And most communities, it's every 3 years for an adult pet. So many people are concerned with over-vaccinating animals. So that vaccine load, the immune load, by having it done every 3 years is really quite minimal, really very, very safe. There are some situations if a pet has a specific immune disease, for instance, where the veterinarian will have said, no, this is inappropriate for this particular animal. But in general, Dr. Fling, I agree with you so adamantly that yes, safeguard your pet, safeguard your family. A bat bite is, I get paper cuts that are deeper than a bat bite, and you'll never know. So, yes.
Right. Very well put, indeed. So it's best to keep your pet safe and check with your local authorities to find out what the laws are in your region. It could be that it's a once a year, or it could be a once every 3 year vaccine that's required. And so being up to date on that information and knowing what the laws are in your area is so, so important to avoid just difficulty for either you or your pet. And I think the last thing any of us who really love our pets would want is to see them have to be taken away from us and put into a quarantine facility and separated. So there's a lot to consider here, and it's important to know the laws.
As we were talking at the beginning, this is forecast basically for ticks and mosquitoes. And you had mentioned a little bit about some of the other tick-borne diseases that CAPSI is concerned with, basically Ehrlichia and anaplasmosis. I think a lot of people haven't heard about those diseases. Explain a little bit about them if you could.
Well, these are blood-borne parasites, and basically like little bacterial organisms, and they can affect the body in a variety of ways. And some people call these blood parasites the great imitators because the symptoms of these little organisms can be so widely varied. And what the CAPSI forecast maps are showing is that with a big year in tick spread and tick transmission, that these organisms like Ehrlichiosis and anaplasmosis, these diseases are going to be on the rise. And already Ehrlichia is something fairly common to Western Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri. But these regions are expected to have an even higher activity this year. And there is also an increased risk for Southern California and throughout the Southeast. And areas like the Mississippi River will definitely be seeing an uptick in Ehrlichia. And anaplasmosis as well. You mentioned being in California. There is due to be an increase in anaplasmosis in Northern California, also New York State, Western Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, where we expect a great deal of activity. So that's important to be aware of, because as these ticks are spreading and expanding into new territories, and we have a dynamic and ever-changing situation, it's a good idea to keep an eye on these forecast maps. And to access these maps, you can go to petsandparasites.org. There's also a great free app that you can use for your iPad, and that way you can get local and up-to-date information about parasites in your area, as well as, you know, these sites are great to go to if you plan to travel, because with travel, a lot of these different diseases and agents will spread across regions. And we think that's a big reason that we've seen such a huge rise in parasites across the country.
So thank you very much for bringing up this idea of travel, because travel is so important. People oftentimes don't think about it. Okay, I live in a part of the United States that doesn't have a lot of ticks, and I'm going to be going to a community that's maybe 3 hours away from where I live right now for a little vacation, taking my dog with me. And they can be exposed to so many different types of organisms and diseases there. I love this idea of the CAPSI app, so you can really stay current. And I think it's always important when you're going to be traveling and you're asking for a travel certificate, for instance, if that's going to be required, you're going to be going by plane, that you tell your veterinarian where you're going and ask, if they don't even volunteer, what can my pet run into there that's different that I'm not seeing here where I live? What precautions can I take? I think that's really important for a pet owner to be proactive.
I agree completely. And certainly your pet's veterinarian will be your local expert and often can advise you about travel. And you mentioned health certificates. I think that's a great part of being prepared. And it's a great idea to have a checkup before you plan to travel to make sure that your pet is travel ready and able to handle the rigors of what comes with either air travel or even car travel. And you want to make sure you have an ID and certain things, a microchip. And of course, you want to make sure that you look ahead to where you're going. And again, the petsandparasites.org site can provide for you a look at the forecast and the regional incidence in different areas of these various parasites. And so you can be prepared with preventative medications so that you know what's up ahead of you.
Excellent. As we wrap up right now, I'd love to have you just quickly say a little bit about the signs that you'd see with anaplasmosis and Ehrlichia. People may not be familiar with it.
Right. Those are some big words. And with both of those parasites, some people call them the great imitators because the signs can be so varied. Initially, we may see no signs at all, but then we can see all sorts of things like bleeding tendencies, bruising tendencies, sometimes blindness. I've even seen pets that have bleeding into the inside of the eye where they've gone blind acutely.
Tragic.
Very tragic. And some of these pets may have symptoms that people write off to, oh, my pet's aging, he's slowing down, he's arthritic, you know, he's not walking as fluidly as he used to, he's getting older. But in actuality, that could be these blood parasites causing arthritic symptoms. And so again, your pet's veterinarian can help you know by evaluation on a physical exam and with testing to know if these parasites are actually present. Other things we can see are kidney disease to, goodness, you know, problems with surgery. So there's a lot of things that these parasites can present with. And so often, you know, the symptoms can be hugely varied. And with things like Lyme disease, we don't always have that classic bullseye sort of rash. There could be other symptoms. There may be fevers or just a general not feeling well to no symptoms at all.
And being the great pretender is so important when you take your pet into your veterinarian. If it's just for a wellness exam, if it's there's something wrong, you're concerned with it, let your veterinarian know about any travel history. It's like with people when they were coming back and they had Ebola and that whole situation where they didn't ask, you know, what's the travel history of this particular person? And it turned out to be something horrid, the Ebola virus. It may be something that is horrid for your pet. So always make sure when you see your veterinarian, there's ever a concern. Give them all the information, even if it doesn't seem as though it's going to be really pertinent. It may be. Subtle can be significant. So travel history can be extremely significant.
Right. Yeah, that's such a good point about subtle is often significant. So if there's any changes in your pet's behavior, definitely discuss those things with your doctor and don't be so quick to say it's part of aging. Those can be very important clues, not only your travel, but any symptoms that your pet shows. And partner with your pet's doctor and make sure that you see your pet at least annually to make sure that he or she is protected and tested at least every year to keep them safe.
Great information, Dr. Fling. Thank you so much. I've been chatting today with Dr. Karen Fling, owner of Eastlake Veterinary Hospital in Dallas, Texas, and member of the Companion Animal Parasite Council. One more time, Dr. Fling, where can they get this information, these great apps and information on the internet?
They can go to petsandparasites.org, or you can also go to iTunes and download our free app for your iPad.
Well, thank you very much. You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz and today Dr. Karen Fling. This is the Pet Doctor of Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.